Good morning. Thank you all for coming to sit together, and a special welcome to our friends who attended the introductory class here yesterday. Please be comfortable during this talk. Change positions if you need to, but try to sit tall and hear the words, just listening, without analyzing or rationalizing them. My name is Bill Hammaker, and I have been practicing with the Zen Center of Denver for over 30 years. Many of us, whether we are here for the first time or have been here for a long time, come with certain ideas about what Zazen or Buddhism or enlightenment are about. This is a serious mistake. It's probably unavoidable, though. We're all so used to approaching any situation in life with a whole set of expectations about what it is we are doing, how we must do it, and how it is going to turn out. We have been hardwired through our conditioning and upbringing to use our minds as tools to conquer a problem. We have to make a plan, or figure it out, or set a goal and follow through, and on and on. We believe that we must confront every situation in our lives in this manner in order to survive, to avoid difficulties, and mostly to escape suffering. Ironically, this approach actually creates and compounds suffering, because this approach, this modus operandi, implies that there is a correct solution, a fixed outcome, an absolute certainty when, in fact, nothing is certain or fixed. In Buddhism, this is called the law of impermanence. And we've all opened up a world of hurt, as the saying goes, by ignoring the law of impermanence. When we didn't get the job we interviewed for, when the person, place, or thing we yearned for disappeared, when all of our hard work and planning came to nothing, after all our expectations, requirements, and demands have been thwarted, we have suffered. And because we have suffered, we come to an introductory class, or a sitting, or an extended retreat, hoping to figure out why we suffer and how to transcend it. Again, this is a serious mistake. Not the coming to the class, or the sitting, or the retreat part, but arriving here with the same game plan that obviously hasn't worked. It hasn't worked, has it? Bernie Glassman, who died this past November, was the founder of the Zen Peacemaker Order. He helped establish the White Plum Sangha, an American Zen community that our center is now part of, since one of our teachers here recently received Dharma transmission in this line. During his life, Glassman Roshi worked tirelessly to fulfill the Bodhisattva vow of saving the many beings. In doing this work, out of necessity, he formulated what are called the three tenets of the Zen Peacemaker Order. These are not knowing, bearing witness, and taking action. Let's look at the first tenet of the Zen Peacemakers, not knowing. This is the antidote for what we've been talking about. Here is how to stop the cycle of personal suffering brought about by our endless need to know. In his book, Bearing Witness, Glassman Roshi relates how he and his wife, Sandra Jishu Holmes, set out to live out this vow by establishing the Greyston Bakery and its many subsidiaries, which included housing for the homeless, an AIDS medical center, a garment manufacturing company, all these born out of a vision to hire and train unemployable residents of the inner city. Jishu spent some 15 years of her life working in Greyston. But one day, Bernie relates, she came out of a difficult meeting with other Greyston staff members, visibly disappointed and downhearted. There was a disagreement and disharmony among the various staff people, with no resolution in sight, he says. And Jishu told him, "You know, after all the time I've spent working here, if there is one thing I thought I knew, it was Greyston. But today, I realize that after all these years, I knew nothing about Greyston. Nothing at all." The Emperor Ryo asked Bodhidharma, "What is the first principle of the holy teaching?" Bodhidharma said, "Vast emptiness, nothing holy." The Emperor said, "Who is this person confronting me?" Bodhidharma said, "I don't know." Not knowing also makes it possible for anything and everything to happen, according to Glassman Roshi. He continues, "When we don't know, when we have no expectations or fixed ideas about something, then everything that happens at any given moment is just what's happening." Bernie says, "We like to use the phrase, let it be. The truth is, we have no choice. No matter what we think, we are never in control, and things will happen as they happen. But, in a state of unknowing, we actually live without attachment to preconceived ideas. There is no expectation of gain, no expectation of loss. There's just what's right here now." Case number 20 from the Shoyoroku. Jiso asked Hogen, "What are you up to these days?" Hogen said, "I am wandering at random." Jiso said, "What do you expect from wandering?" Hogen said, "I don't know." Jiso said, "Not knowing is most intimate." In August 2017, three of us from our Sangha participated in a street retreat with the Upaya Zen Center of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and members of the Zen Peacemakers. We lived on the streets of Denver for 4 days and 3 nights in a state of temporary homelessness. Oddly enough, the most difficult part for me was not the physical and mental discomfort I encountered during the retreat. What was most difficult was putting aside all of my preconceptions about what I was doing by attending this retreat. Prior to the start, all sorts of questions arose. How could I presume to even try to help the homeless? Was I stealing from them by eating food from the Denver Rescue Mission, by taking up a relatively safe spot sleeping on the street? And although we didn't sleep in shelters, any safe place to lay down for the night is, after all, still a sleeping place. Was I selfishly seeking some kind of spiritual experience at their expense, like some kind of creepy tourist? And most of all, how could I plunge into the heart of not knowing and bear witness to the suffering when there was this dualistic notion of me and them? When the retreat started, I had no other recourse but to drop all of these notions and dive into the uncertainty, into the not knowing, so that the discomfort, the anxiety, the boredom, the confusion just became part of the landscape. Nighttime glistening raindrops cascading through street-lit tree leaves. The hubbub of the nearby Taste of Colorado Festival. The clamor of the light rail near our sleeping place on the grounds of St. Thomas's Episcopal Church. The haunted look in the eyes of the man sitting across the table in the rescue mission dining hall. All the questions I had before the retreat became pointless. We were not trying to save the world or become one with it. We were only endeavoring to come closer to the lives of those who live on the streets, reflect on giving and impermanence, and recognize the humanity all people share. In the storied koan, "Ordinary mind is the way," Nan Xuan, responding to Zhao Zhou's earnest questioning, says, "The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion. Not knowing is blankness." So even as this I merged into the sights, sounds, and sensations of the raw experience of living out in the open, totally exposed, there was a blankness. The human element was missing. It does not function, this oneness with all experience. There is the need to come down from this lofty place of emptiness, to step off the 100-foot pole, as the saying goes. And this is accomplished by practicing the second Zen peacemaker tenet, bearing witness. Michael is a handsome, well-groomed young man who sports a black eye. He's from Houston, Texas. While he himself is homeless, he says that the rest of his family is fine. Well, why aren't you with them? I had to get away. Where do you stay? I stay here at the rescue mission. You don't want to stay on the street at night. I got into a fight with some guy. He started cussing me out for no reason. And then there were these two guys and a girl, and they had this mean dog, a pit bull. He starts like attacking me, so I kicked it. And then so the girl, she grabs me while the dudes are hitting me. No, you don't want to sleep on the street. I am Michael. Spider approaches our group, flailing the t-shirt he had removed to reveal his compact, muscular torso, shouting, God damn it, I need a shirt so I can give this one to my girlfriend. She wants mine, but she don't want to see me without a shirt. And then he launches into an extended diatribe about how he'd gotten off the streets and into an apartment in Arvada, cleaned up his act, and was sending money to his kids. He said he could bring us stuff if we gave him a shirt. As I removed my somewhat ripe-smelling green t-shirt, Spider saw the black tank top I had on underneath and demanded I turn it over to him. And then he went on with his testimony, exhorting us to get off the streets before it got cold. My fiancé froze to death on the street. Later that evening, Spider was sitting, drunk and dejected, on the outdoor patio of the Denver Rescue Mission, waiting for a bed. I am Spider. Julio sits quietly beside me at the table in the dining hall. Striking up a conversation with him, he had told me how he'd gone through the Denver Rescue Mission's Next Step program that provides a temporary bed, meals, and some basic assistance and education so that they may become self-sufficient. He had been sober for some time now, but the difficulty he has is finding a job since his prior DUI convictions prevent him from driving. I am Julio. Here is Bernie again talking about the second tenet of the Zen peacemakers. Bearing witness means to look at parts of ourselves that we ordinarily ignore and often avoid. We become the terror and gnawing hunger of the starving girl, the grief of her mother, the explosive rage and fear of the killer, the distress and shame of his mother. He admits this is no easy task for any of us. The third tenet of the Zen peacemakers is to take action. We take action based on what we observe through not knowing and bearing witness, the first two tenets. I had vowed that after and out of my retreat experience, I would take action in some way. So I have been involved in hospice volunteering. After training with the Denver Hospice, I endeavored to approach my patients from a place of not knowing and bearing witness. And this was helpful in dealing with the pain, confusion, and fear of death. Not having an agenda, being okay with long silences and not doing anything. Just being there, just listening. This approach can be helpful in any situation. The approach of not having an approach. Seeing clearly that you don't know, and it is okay to not know. Recognizing that there is no separation between self and other, you and me. Not trying to fix anything, but responding wholeheartedly out of the sense of non-separation. We can all find ways of taking action, coming from the place of no I or you. If we look carefully from the place of not knowing and bearing witness, action arises naturally, with no one seeking reward for doing a good deed. No doubt, or confusion, or hesitancy. Trust the Dharma. Trust your practice. Trust this path. Does this approach guarantee that things will always work out to the benefit of all involved? Of course not. Can we practice this way no matter what comes up? Not as often as we'd like to. But this is why it is called practice. Through practice, we recognize the truth that no one and nothing is separate from anything else, that we are all connected, sharing the commonality of human experience, moment to moment, lifetime to lifetime. And with this shared common connection, may we together with all beings realize the way.